Good morning. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inigai-Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Thank you for tuning in. It is so good, as always, to be back with you this morning, folks. Welcome to this dance space. Well, this morning, as always, we're exploring the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. And I'm looking forward to spending the next hour in conversation with all of you as we take in our featured interview. But before we head into the program, I want to share a word of thanks and also a shout out to the staff at Dance Immersion. I had the recent pleasure of joining them as the MC for both their 2025 Youth Showcase and also their presentation of Jata, Conversation of the Mandem. Both events were held this month at Meridian Arts Center Studio Theater in North York. Many thanks to the entire Dance Immersion extended team, the presenting artists, TO Live, and the audience members, all of whom I had the honor of sharing space with. Two outstanding evenings. If you'd like to learn more about the upcoming programming at Dance Immersion, we invite you to visit danceimmersion.ca. And now, coming up on today's broadcast in partnership with the Amani Project, we're pleased to air one of their featured interviews where I had the pleasure of sitting in conversation with the dynamic John Alane. We're sharing the interview for the first time on Turnout Radio. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back with John Alane. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Inigai-Hamilton. Born in Barbados, John Alane immigrated to Canada with his family in 1965 and was accepted to the professional ballet program at the National Ballet School in 1971, joining as the school's first Black Canadian student. Graduating in 1978, he then joined the Stuttgart Ballet in Germany, where he began his choreographic career. John returned to Canada in 1984 and joined the National Ballet of Canada as a first soloist, serving as the company's resident choreographer from 1990 to 1992. John was then appointed artistic director of Ballet BC in 1992, and his leadership marked the beginning of a creative and prosperous period in the company's history as he implemented assertive outreach strategies for strengthening the company's identity locally, nationally, and internationally. Now, over the past 37 years, numerous internationally respected companies, festivals, and institutions have commissioned new choreography from John. He is the recipient of prestigious awards acknowledging his outstanding contribution to the world of dance, including the first ever honorary doctorate of fine arts from Simon Fraser University in 2003, the Exceptional Achievement Award in the Performing Arts from the Black Historical and Cultural Society of British Columbia in 2005, and the African Canadian Achievement Award for Excellence in the Arts and Entertainment in 2016, among many others. Presented by Amani Project, this is my interview with John Alain. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Thank you, Nicole. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
I feel this desire and need to say thank you for all that you give to us, to community, all that you've blessed us with. Your work is grandiose and generous and beautiful and has such depth and tells wonderful stories. And so I wanted to start there and say thank you, John.
I have, and I still continue to enjoy and the richness that of being in the field of dance and participating in it. And it's been a good run. It has been really, really a good run that I hope continues.
I love that you said that it's been a good run, because one of the first things I wanted to ask you about is where you got started. And I often think when I'm asked, when did you get started, Nicole, or where did you get started? I often think about the beginning, but I also think about the now. And it does for me sometimes beg the question, has it been a good run, Nicole? Have I been enjoying the fruits of my labor? Have I been enjoying this beautiful journey? So I love that you've said that it's been a good run. So let's talk about that run.
Where did it all begin? I actually don't equate it to walking into a studio. For me, I think it really began with my parents and my family, who really encouraged the idea of this world is here for you to participate in. And they really encourage any opportunity that comes in front of you that you feel you want to be a part of. There is no reason for you not to be. And when dance arrived, it was as if life began for me. It was what I'd been waiting for. So there was no hesitancy about moving into that world and participating.
When you say that life began, what was life like before, if life felt like it really began in that moment?
I do remember it. There was nothing wrong with it, but I was waiting. Mm. I was waiting for something. And like many immigrants, we were exposed to so many different things, and all the newness was wonderful. It was interesting. It was long. But when I stepped into a dance studio, it started. There was a wonderful sense of community. In a studio, you walk in, and every day you start class with your classmates, your colleagues, and we move together, we breathe together. So the fundamental beginning of learning to dance was in community. And all of a sudden, in this land in which everything was new, there was a space where it was dance, expression, the body. And that was that, I guess that was a large part of that feeling of this is where I belong. Then the demand, the rigor, the work, I think the other wonderful thing, even in the early beginnings, was an understanding that it was this pursuit of the goal that was so exciting. And in that pursuit, there were just an immense amount of discoveries, from friendship to, yes, I can do this, and oh my goodness, this is beautiful.
What do you think John has discovered about John since that beginning that you mentioned? What's one of the, in fact, tell me, what's one of the most surprising, perhaps, and most beautiful discoveries that you have made about yourself, John, in this journey?
I think the thing that continually surprises me is how much I enjoy learning, how much within an art form you are forever reflecting on yourself, reflecting on the world, reflecting on the people within the world, and it is continual learning. You are learning from yourself, you're learning from the people around you, and that is wonderful to know that it's never ending. It's never ending.
Here's why I love that you've said that, because I found that in my journey, in those never ending moments of continuously learning, that at times I feel so awoken. And then there are also moments where I feel sadness, because we feel a lot. Many of us as artists, I often hear many artists, including myself, say, we feel a lot. We feel the energy. We feel the energy of space and time and people. And so there are moments of sadness sometimes in that learning, moments of being awoken in that learning, moments of desiring more in that learning.
It is so beautiful. So,
I'm trying. Yeah, because I'm really thinking about, what does that mean when we are continuously learning? What does that look like?
I Greek mythology, Sisyphus, the climbing up the hill, the labor of carrying the rock. But each time that you move up that hill, it's a different view. It's a different experience. So it's in the repetition of our lives, or in the simplicity of doing a ballet class every single day, there is always difference. There's always newness. There's always risk. And in that place, you can learn, but you can also discover pain. And in our journeys of life, there is joy and there is trauma. And that makes up the humanness of our experience.
More with John Alain coming up after this. Thank you.
I've been fortunate, or opportunity has been placed in front of me. First and foremost, the basis is a elite level classical ballet training. And to have that opportunity to be offered that has laid a foundation. That is a very, very, very important part of, I believe, of the training and the career that came out of that time. And that was spent from between the ages of 11 and 18 at the National Ballet School in Toronto. And in that was also, for me, it was like an explosion of a flower. Because that was all, not only was there the practice, then there was music, then there was art, then there was literature, then there were individuals coming in to teach and rehearse you who were coming from all over the world. There were exchanges of students from all over the world. So there were perspectives. And so that training wasn't, as I said, wasn't only in the studio, but it was also around life. Then there has been an array of individuals who have supported, who have exposed me to ideas of art, moral and ethical ideas of exploring the world, all the way through. There's always been people who have come and sat beside and turned my head to look in directions that I may not have seen before.
Yes, yes. And you graduated from the National Ballet School in 1978.
Yes.
So you have seen a lot.
And now I look at it as 1971 to 1978, and I immediately think, what just happened?
Yes.
You know, what allowed that space to take that young person in? And, you know, civil rights movement, right there, the world was shaken up. So sometimes I think with all the work that was done before, it allowed the opportunity when that gift was, or that talent arrived in front of them, they said, why not? Let's try it. And so I only hope and imagine now that we've where we have arrived now, that openness is even broadened, that more people are now able to participate in which and whatever way they want to participate.
You think it has, John?
Yeah. I know I'm going to do my darndest to help it along.
Yes.
And I believe there are a lot of people out there who are determined to keep the movement going in the appropriate direction.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I am one person, but no truth, no justice. So, within the idea of restorative justice, great work has to be done before we come to the table. Everyone has to do great work. Then, when we finally do come, and if there is truth, then there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yes. The optimal word being truth.
The other thing that has been pushing me along lately is at one point in my life, I have to come to terms that, or I had to come to terms that with all of the amazing opportunity, I needed to accept the task at hand. And without that sort of really strong commitment to the task, the opportunity is missed. So, you know, you're asking people to accept the task. And our parents did. So I think, it is where we've landed.
You're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Talk to us about where your path has really journeyed to as it applies to collaborations in your life.
The nature of the form of dance and the history of it, it is about collaboration. It is, as I said, about community. And so for those really rich moments to happen, it has been about the collision of ideas and perspectives within a space, whether it is you and a dancer, or you and a writer, or you and a composer, and you bring yourself to that place of innovation, and it happens there, it happens within that space. So, for example, with a dance, some of the wonderful artists that I've worked with, and you are digging deep into whether it is vocabulary or whether it is ideas or whether it is space, and in the digging there is immense discovery. And what I really sometimes, what I love about them, or I've come to terms to realize, it is the exploration. When you are in collaboration, it is the collaboration that is the art. So often, the sort of results of those collaborations with me have happened after, when I take that and then I go into producing a work that is totally driven by myself. But all of those gains from the space of collaboration have been brought along. So I go back, sometimes it is what it is. It is only the collaboration, and the collaboration itself is the art.
Hmm. I had a student tell me once with regards to collaboration that they fear it. They fear the idea of working in partnership with another individual. Can we really express our true selves when we're in partnership, collaborating and working with someone? I feel like I can only bring 50% of myself. And so it's interesting to hear about the relationships that some of us have with collaboration. I see a beauty in collaboration.
So is the question, am I able to come into collaboration with no expectations?
Ah, yes.
Because especially, you know, there is the creation in this presentation. And if presentation is guiding collaboration, that can be pretty scary because what I seek out is the collaboration is what I'm seeking.
Okay. I love where you're going with this. So in your opinion then, John, what should guide collaboration? As you spoke about presentation a moment ago, but what should guide collaboration in order for collaboration to be healthy and prosperous and fulfilling?
Pursuit. It is that. I don't want to say it's not pure. It is in that carrying the rock up the hill. It is in the pursuit of the end that there is potential, in the randomness, in the craziness, in the danger, in the exposure, in the mistakes made. And sometimes you need to sit in that space so long that the performance has come and gone.
I'm deep in thought regarding this.
I'm so sorry.
I love this. I'm deep in thought regarding this because when we think about collaboration, what should be guiding? And I'm really thinking back to the most powerful collaborations that I've had in my life. And oftentimes what has driven them or brought them to a place of success or fulfillment for me is communication.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
There, sorry.
Yeah. Understanding.
Yeah,
unification. And I'll come back to the understanding of knowing that our differences in that collaboration, if I'm collaborating with an artist who has a very different reality, lived experience than me, what has made them brilliant is the understanding that we are respectfully unifying, coming together and respecting those differences with the understanding that our pursuit, I love that word, that our pursuit has a similar destination or where it is that we're going has that we have the same destination in that collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of depth to that word, collaboration. So can you share some of the names, you know, that have blessed your career, that have impacted you, inspired you, challenged you?
So I'll try to pick out different points in the career. And without a doubt, my first artistic director, when I started my professional life, I ended up in Stuttgart, Germany. And running the company was a fantastic Brazilian ballerina, Marcia Hede. And she set up an environment in which risk, innovation, personality was really important. And the environment was very much of a sort of a neoclassical and contemporary environment. But the probably the most, here's this group, most influential quality about this being, being the great artist and great dancer she was. She clearly understood, or she felt, everything was bigger than her. It wasn't about her, the performer. It was about her, the performer, in the art, in the form, and how it connected to the world. It was really an awakening. Another individual, much like her, that was as surprising, was when I connected and had the first opportunity to work with Arthur Mitchell. And there too was another human being who was great unto his own and what he had accomplished, but where he saw the form was much bigger. His vision really brought in everyone. It was a social movement. He was in pursuit of a better world, and he was using his dance, and he was there's the tributaries of greatness that have come out from this one person because of his immense generosity of spirit. I am impressed by, those are major people that have influenced me. I mean, they're people that I've met, they're people that I haven't met. I am forever fascinated by the idea of chance and randomness, and I wish I had the opportunity to sit down with John Cage, in my life. So many people, there are so many individuals who participated in what I was doing and allowed and gave space to that. There are Canadian composers, Canadian visual artists. There is the dancer.
Yes.
There is, and there, you don't want to, the list goes on and on and on of individuals who brought themselves into the studio completely, freely, and dived into whatever I was bringing in. They found themselves within the work, they directed the work, and they made the work. And the number, they're just faces that are sort of flashing by me that have been part of this collaboration.
Yes, 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 and yes, John. Yes.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice.
I think it's quite special when we have teachers in our journey, influencers, mentors, directors, humans that challenge us to really think beyond the space that we occupy. Just beyond that, taking a moment to really consider moving away from the centering of self and thinking about the greater scope of how and where and why we exist in space and time. Very powerful.
Well, yeah. What were you just speaking about? Collaboration, and I can put it, true innovation. And you used the word communication. And I think of relationships, the concept of relationships.
Yes.
And it is definitely bigger than ego.
Today's episode is brought to you by Amani Project. The platform shares intergenerational wisdom among African diasporic artists and educators while creating an enduring archive of their contributions to the cultural fabric of the world. Amani, which means artist mentorship and networking interplay, is created and managed by Right Path World Arts director Kai Patanta and Tamia Wharton-Suri. You can tune in to the extended version of today's interview and learn more about Amani Project by visiting amaniproject.ca. More with John Elaine coming up. What are some of those triumphs, John? I can only imagine. There must be many, John. Some of the triumphs that you are incredibly proud about.
John, stay away from ego, and you just mentioned ego. I love it. Yeah, there you are.
You see what I did there, right?
Oh, yeah, that was very good. Well, the form for being in dance, there is dance, there is art. You said there's relationships and then there's life. So when you are thrown into this field, and as wonderful as it was, I was the only Black person, and daily you are reminded that you don't belong. So when you are 18, 19, your first job, and it is in a space in which, at that time, 1978, 79, again, Marcia Heyday, it was a diverse company. And on all levels of the company, there was color. And this is 1978.
Right.
And in the 6 years that I was there, it wasn't just one. Color and diversity just kept on moving through the organization. But when you find yourself at 19 on the stage of the Metropolitan Opera starting your career, that is a highlight, because it says nowhere up from here. You know, it's quite remarkable. When you find yourself, because of the nature of the company, walking up the Great Wall, these are moments in your life that you're walking through Beijing in 1981.
Yes,
that changes life. Being appointed to the directorship of Ballet British Columbia was immense and was a again, an opportunity. It's like you find that crack in the barricade and the light comes through, and that was Valley BC. There was so much opportunity, and it was new, and it was new. There was a performance in 2006, and that's many years after running the organization, in which we did, it was an American choreographer, a European choreographer, and a Canadian choreographer. And on stage, producing that work, and in the audience, for that brief moment in Vancouver, there was diversity in the theater. And the dancers were beautiful. They were so beautiful. And there was this response of appreciation from the audience at the end of the evening. And you realize that there was this space, Queen Elizabeth in Vancouver in 2006, in which there was representation on stage, there was representation in the audience, there was representation in the office of the ballet that produced this work. And all that we were experiencing was a collective experience of beauty and the human spirit. And that was, and still remains, an incredibly important and what I consider one of the highlights, one of the most important moments in my career so far.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful, John. John, I don't want to let you go. I could sit here and speak with you all day.
I have enjoyed this.
I must ask you, you know, before we end today, out of the numerous amount of shares that you've given, for those that are coming up behind you, John, those that are, who are coming up with you, who are learning and watching, listening, what would you share today? Those words of wisdom.
That's always so hard. We're all in our own time and period in the world. Keeps on evolving and changing. That's remarkable. But what I've found is whatever time I believe is required to reach a dream, take that time, double it, take that and double it, and then take that and add some more to it. And maybe that might be close to what is really required. So when you think it'll only take a certain amount, multiply it by 3 at least. And do what I find when you think you've gotten to the end and you go back and start again and there's more, the rewards are just so equally as full and as extensive as the time required. So it really is about, I go back, the pursuit. It really is allowing that time for your dream, your vision, your goals to really develop to their capacity. And so often the capacity is much greater than we even imagined.
Ah, yes, it is. John, what a wonderful way to close today. What a wonderful way to close. I really appreciate that last share, John, because I feel like it's a powerful reminder that it's okay for us to take our time. It's okay. Life is just, I find very often in our society, we're conditioned to keep producing and running and rushing and producing and running and rushing and presenting. So what you've shared is such a powerful reminder. Take your time. It's actually okay. So that doubling allows for that.
Well, thank, thank, You have been so gracious. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for today, John. I'm looking forward to many more conversations with you. Thank you for joining me today on the Imani Project. Such a pleasure to sit down with you.
I have so enjoyed speaking with you today. Thank you.
Today, you've been listening to the sounds of Cannonball Adderley with Autumn Leaves and John Coltrane with Blue Train. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. That was John Alain. It was so wonderful to have shared time in conversation with him. Many, many thanks again to John. To learn more about his work and journey, we invite you to visit johnalain.ca. Our gratitude as well to the Imani Project for the production of the interview and for partnering with Turnout Radio to present it during this morning's broadcast. To learn more about their work, visit imaniproject.ca. Technical production of the extended original Imani Project interview was facilitated by the fabulous Amber Downey Back. Folks, if you missed the top of the interview, you can head to turnoutradio.com, CIUT.FM, and some of your favorite podcast platforms where this episode will soon be streaming. And this brings us to a close of today's show. Thank you for spending time with us this hour. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inica Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance.
Bye.